to make those rainbows in my mind. When I think of you sometime, and I want to spend some time with you, just the two of us. We can make it if we try, just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Building castles in the sky, just the two of us. You and I.
Well, the music says it all. Welcome to the Football Family, the 42ers dedicated football podcast. I am your host, David Sled, and while Gav Cooney unfortunately cannot join us today, Shane Keegan thankfully is on hand to provide some comfort. Good morning, Shane.
How are you getting on, David?
I'm very well. How was your weekend?
Not too bad. Packed full of sport, as usual, I suppose. Both sport that I'm watching or coaching or participating in, and plenty then to watch on TV as well. So yeah, it was about as chock-a-block with sport now as I've had in a long time, which makes it a good weekend, naturally, apart from some results not going our way.
I was going to say, obviously, we'll get into it. I think today could be, even though it's just the two of us, something tells me today could be an interesting podcast, possibly. There could be some breaking news. This is one of the medium of podcasts is that I feel as if something could break while we're chatting. Yeah, it may not break, and it might happen about 2 minutes after we finish recording, and we just look like a pair of, well, I will look like a sap.
If people are wondering why we're still talking shite after 2 hours, it's because we're waiting for the breaking news to break.
I know. Although I don't expect this breaking news to be about a manager incoming with the Ireland team, although it could possibly be a departure, but we will see. What were you doing on Friday?
Friday. I'm after getting roped into doing a bit of work here and there for your crowd, Pats. Yeah. So I've done they're developing a new app over there or something. I think Kelleher he's involved in the development of a new app or something. So they do this kind of, you know, your man, what's his name? Goldberg or Goldbridge or whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah. In fairness, Goldberg and Goldbridge are two very different characters. I would much rather try and slap the head off one of them than the other.
Yeah, well, the Pats are doing that kind of crack with the watch-alongs and all that kind of stuff going on at the moment. So I was involved in that, but there wasn't a whole lot to watch along with. It was Pats and Dundalk. Without going into a deep dive yet, was about as dull a game as you will get now, to be honest with you. Friday night, were you watching that as well?
No, I was in Talkett for Shells and Balls. Obviously Balls ending.
Definitely more excitement. You got the better end of the stick there.
Fair enough, really good game. Even the first half an hour when there was no goals, Shells were really good. Balls fans will be delighted to hear that we will be going into that game. Probably a lot more focus, and also focusing on their manager, Alan Reynolds, because obviously you have decent knowledge about him and how he operates as a colleague, but also as a rival. But the reason why is even on Friday, and it's gas, but like the Irish manager stuff, like you obviously were you seeing the stuff about Solskjaer that was sent out about the manager's gig?
I wasn't on top of it, to be honest with you. The first I copped of it was I was doing Off the Ball on Saturday, and you know they send you the pre-show notes. One of Shane Hannon's notes was that, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has gone odds on for the Irish job. I was like, what? that was the first time I'd done. So I've done a bit of digging around it then at that stage. But he been a bit premature to say it's sailed off into the sunset as quickly as it arrived, no?
Yeah, well, it's not happening. He obviously, Solskjaer spoke to the journalist Andy Mitten, who obviously have a long-standing relationship, and basically said doesn't know where it came from. This is the thing. So when this broke, and I think listeners to the pod would have heard myself and Gav chatting about this, about people who would have been in touch for the Ireland job and who the FAI approached. So obviously, we knew that Solskjaer, this is the thing, normally with these, sorry, I'm getting a message there going through, that's, I have to reply to this message while we're chatting, but I will, this is, sorry listener for this, but the reason being is this is part of the story that could yet emerge. But what I'm saying is, so normally with these, with the betting stuff that comes out, the bookies, you kind of ignore it, because you're like, I just can't be arsed dealing with it. Like, you know what I mean? They're looking for a bit of publicity. But I've been told, and this is maybe a little bit of an insight into maybe how this is going over the last little while. So I had been told, we're in April, I've been told end of February, March time, that Solskjaer had been approached for the job and had declined the opportunity to take the job. So that was told to me by someone who I would say, obviously, was not didn't need it out there that Solskjaer was going to be linked with the job. It was just it was there, but was asked, listen, don't use it yet. And you kind of do a favour. This is what happens in this, you know what I mean? You have your sources and you try to trust them, and you have to build it. So when I saw that coming out Solskjaer, I was like, all right, well, we know that the FAO had already approached, well, we myself and Gavin knew that the FAO had already approached them. We're gonna have to actually spend a bit of time here digging into this rather than just doing what normally you would do with a bookies press release and ignore it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And before I knew it, 3 hours would be day of my life. But also part of the reason is that being getting in touch and then getting told, well, yeah, there could be something happening here. And you're like, okay, what's happening here? Is there a change in mind? Because this seems to be the FAO's modus operandi. The way they're carrying out this is that they're going back to people who have already turned it down to see if they actually want the job. And then it's like, it's just been a bit of a mess.
Look, I would be into not even so much the gambling side of things, but I do find the whole bookmaking side of things interesting. It's kind of a match of, I am a geeky kind of numbers person. Maths was about the only thing I was ever good at in school. So the marriage of kind of numbers and maths with sport obviously has kind of sucked me in. And so I would be keeping an eye on that market. And I am somebody who has a small little wager on John O'Shea put on a good few weeks ago. So I have. But like, I can't ever remember, and as you say, you have to take the whole thing with a pinch of salt, but I can't ever remember a managerial market in which there has been so many different favourites. Like, there must be 20 plus people have been favoured for this job at different stages. And as you say, a fella becomes favoured, then he gets completely written off, and then sure, he's back as favoured again a while later. Like, Carsley was favoured at least 7 times. John O'Shea has been favoured I don't know how many times. Random names all over the place have come up in between. Did I read a piece, Friday, Saturday, please tell me it wasn't you. I actually don't know who had the piece out recently saying John O'Shea definitely is not getting the job.
Oh yeah, sorry, I saw that was in the Irish Sun. It was Neil O'Riordan, I think, had that in the Irish
Maybe that is still the case, but if that is the case, somebody needs to let Paddy Power know, because John O'Shea is currently odds on for the gig. Not as we say that means a whole lot based on what we've seen so far.
Do you know what's being kind of slightly strange about the whole lot is that normally, genuinely, you would be getting, when this is happening, you'd be getting a steer, you'd be getting a bit of insight, and you'd be building up a kind of sense of what's happening, what you call it. But it's genuinely not being the case.
But David, as I keep saying, that's because normally there's stuff to know. Yeah. There is nothing to know here. There is nothing to know because there's nothing happening. They can't get somebody. That's it. End of story. The reason nobody knows anything is because a name emerges because they've gone and spoken to him. That person becomes odds-on favourite. Then that person rejects the job. And then we're on to the next name. And the new next name becomes the odds-on favourite. But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that the names that we're getting or the names that you're getting have been, like, bum steers or anything. I think they were genuinely people that they went after and then just failed to get.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's absolute carnage. Look, we keep saying the same thing, but it is. It's a joke. Like, it's an absolute joke the way the whole thing's been handled.
But it's like what you say is, like they have the names have been linked. They've actually got after, obviously, with some of them. Like, obviously, the Solskjaer stuff wouldn't have come out. Obviously, we were going to use that as part of myself and Gav. Obviously, are going to hopefully, once this is all over, have a bigger kind of overview piece of how this is all kind of played out and some of the factors that have been at play. But there's obviously names who have been approached that they would have spoken to who haven't yet come out. Obviously, Solskjaer would have been one of them, which is kind of interesting. But it's kind of in that stage sense now of fatigue, isn't it, really? Like, I know we're even chatting about it now. It's just...
Only now?
I know.
I think we hit fatigue about a month ago at least. And... I don't know where it's going to go.
Well, Shane, I teased it that this could be an interesting podcast because obviously just before we did start recording this, being told that Jonathan Hill was to depart the FAO as chief executive. While we had been on, I see that now has actually been confirmed with an official release from the Football Association too. So just to read it out, Shane, just so you can actually gather your own thoughts here now a little bit and buy a bit of time. So, because I had actually been told as well that the staff were getting called to a meeting, and that happened actually bang on at 11 o'clock, and we're being told, so I'm glad that whatchacallit, that Neville Marriage, why we're chatting. So the board of the Football Association of Ireland is today announcing the departure of Chief Executive Jonathan Hill. Jonathan joined the FAI as CEO in November 2020 and has been at the helm of the association for the past 3.5 years. So there is a statement there from Tony Keohan, the independent chair of the board of the FAI, who has kind of commented it on Jonathan Hill's tenure, saying obviously I want to thank Jonathan for his hard work and dedication over the past number of years and wish him well for the future. And then Jonathan Hill himself has said that in a lengthy statement, so obviously you were just reading this, so apologies if it's a bit all over the shop. One line here that just kind of stuck out is that since 2020, the FAI team and wider football community have embraced what has been a radical transformation process for the association, and I'm proud of what has been achieved. We have developed a new, dynamic senior leadership team, a clear strategic vision, a bold plan to address football's wider infrastructure needs, and a stable and growing financial platform for further and sustainable growth. So that's how he views things now after that. And it's kind of like, I know it's kind of been muted, wasn't there? Obviously there's been the issues with the, obviously with his pay and having to apologize and having to return money regarding holiday pay that he had been given. There's been the Oireachtas committees that actually overshadowed the FAI strategic plan and the what was being put in place and what Mark Cadham had been working on. And it just seems as if this has been a bit of a almost death by a thousand cuts, almost, that bit by bit his position has just become a bit untenable at the FAI. And it's just
I wouldn't be keeping up on the Oireachtas stuff as much as you guys would have to on journalism, on the journalist side of things. It's very, very simple for me. I would have removed him from the job based on the fact that he has moved over to the country. Simple as, from quite a while ago, to be honest with you. I think it's absolutely farcical how the hell you could do such an important job not living in the country or spending limited time in the country is absolutely farcical. Yeah. For no other reason, I have felt that he shouldn't have been in the role, to be honest with you. I don't mean to kick a man when he's down. I'm sure there is good stuff that he has done. But look, David, I interviewed for the Galway United job once upon a time, and Galway United were able to tell me that they wouldn't be giving me the role unless I moved my entire family over to Galway, which seemed more than fair request to me, even though I was only living an hour and a half from Galway, and I was happy to do so. I mean, that was at an extremely, extremely lower level than what we're talking about here. How you can be fully invested in the role while living outside of the country just makes no sense to me. And I know others will go down other routes around the Oireachtas and all of that kind of stuff. As I say, I'm probably not as well versed on all that side of things, but if I'm honest, am I happy that we're going to move on from him? I am, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I suppose it's like, what you call it? I don't know. I kind of just think, like, I don't see, even now, we've literally just been talking about the manager situation and how that's played out. And obviously, Mark Cadham has been the one mainly kind of leading that. But as well, Hill also has had his impact on that as well, you know. And if you kind of assess it from a point of view of what's been happening with the FAI and what's happened, like, he's obviously pointed out to some of what he sees as some of the successes, but there has been a fair bit of turmoil as well. Some of it has been at his own making. And you're saying there about, you know, not coming over and not moving over. It was almost as if the hand he had a strong hand at the very start, you know, of where the FAI was at and who his predecessor was and what was happening, that maybe felt as if he could possibly get away with it. But At the end of the day, it's another administrator gone.
Yeah,
it's worrisome. It's something, Joe. I think it's going to be something that we will reflect on a bit more. I know, obviously, what's going on? This news was just broken. Obviously, you've been working on it just before we came on the air, but it's definitely something that we can reflect on in a bit more depth over the next little while. Just while assessing, obviously, going to speak to people, just assess how people are working with them. Because you obviously said it there about maybe not being in the country, but it's definitely got to be something that to assess on how his legacy and how people view the work that he
was. Has he been in the role long enough to have a legacy? I don't think he has. Like, to be honest with you, you know, I think it's more of a blip nearly his period of time than it is anything where you could assess a legacy. Look, you know, I have to be careful how I phrase it here. I don't mean to sound like, you know, I'm not going beating the anti. What's the phrase I'm looking for? I'm not saying that everything that's Irish is better. I just, I just felt that that appointment needed to be somebody who was Irish. I really, really did. And I think there are some outstanding candidates within our own country. And I just, it didn't make sense for me. As I say, look, when he came out and said that he was going to move across and all that, I said, look, fair enough. You definitely have to give the man a chance. But like, that never happened. That in itself, for me, was just spoke to how invested he was going to be in the role. And I look forward to some of the names that will hopefully come up over the next while.
Could you imagine how long this search is going to go on for? Oh my God.
But I would, look, I genuinely, I would be excited about the direction this can go in if they do get the right person. And I would immediately be throwing out the same names that I threw out the last time round when before Jonathan Hill got it. Like, you know, there are some people in this country, the likes of Gary Keegan for me, who I think could be truly, properly transformational within the FAI if he was to come into such a role. John Costello, who's been CEO of Dublin GAA for, I don't know how long, a long, long time, I think 94, I think it was, what's that, 30 years in the gig or something like that. Now, he stepped down at the end of last year. Now, that was, you know, that was based, he was retiring. I don't know whether he'd want the hassle of something like this at his stage of life. But a guy who's done an absolutely, truly phenomenal job in his role as CEO of Dublin GAA would probably be the second name I'd throw out there. But look, plain and simple, I would go absolutely all out for somebody like Gary Keegan. I think it could truly, truly have the effect that we had hoped that we were going to get with Jonathan Hill.
Right, from breaking news to what's now probably a bit of an old story, but Alan Reynolds' impact at Bowles. Like, I think, well, one of his impacts on Irish football is the goalkeeper injury going down and getting a bit of training. It happened on Friday as well. Probably at a time when Shells were the better team. And then obviously after that, but then it was basically one long ball and one set piece that undid Shells. Very unlike them. Duff was fuming, and understandably so. But the set piece, I don't know if you saw the goal. You could even twigged it in the press box. As soon as Dale Rooney stepped up, it was after his fourth stride that Jordan Flores made his run and kind of pushed off the shoulder. The coil went to the back post, got his free header. And then obviously the balls, Benjo were celebrating together. It was clear that it was a kind of a well worked off the trying to pitch. But what do you think Rennie will bring in? You haven't really kind of gone into too much depth about it, obviously, because just how it's kind of materialised over the last little while. But for a club that Bowles are at and what they're expecting and what they want to try and achieve, what can Rennie bring into that place?
Yeah, look, I suppose he's well steeped in League of Ireland football and just in coaching at this stage. I mean, everybody in the league knows Rennie's name, I would think. And he's, you know, he's been at quite a few different clubs in quite a few different roles, which I think is a really interesting thing with Rennie as well. He's had no problem bouncing between, you know, the manager to the coach to, you know, even roles where he wasn't even the lead coach at times. But I'll tell you, like, I suppose I've always kind of wondered, I would know Rennie. Look, I'd know him a good while now at this stage. I think he might have initially been at Waterford United either as manager or coach way back when I came into my first gig in League of Ireland back in, say, 2012. He's kind of always been in the league ever since then, alongside his international roles. So, I mean, you look at the list of managers that he has worked under or alongside, and it's unbelievable. Like, what a learning experience. I mean, I'm so jealous of that, having been somebody who's kind of, you know, either been the manager or you know, I wouldn't have even had any experience to top level coaches as a player because I didn't play at the highest level. Like, Rennie's experience to managers and coaches is unbelievable. And I think that'll stand to him massively as well, so it will. I suppose it's a hard one to know what represents success this year. You look at the league table, where should they be finishing? You would think, budget-wise, would it be what? I don't think it'd be top four. I wouldn't think they would be in the top four for budget this season. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, I suppose Derry Rovers Pats is probably your top three, what you'd imagine on budget. Maybe Bowes would be fourth, would it? Thereabouts. But yet, I wouldn't say it's failure if he doesn't manage to get a top four spot. They're currently fifth. Yeah, maybe I'm being kind on him. It's just, it's anarchy at the moment. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you win a game, and what? He's 3 points off second, but he's also 2 points off eight. Like, it's just a mental season. And even his results up until now, like they're just a bit mad. Like the Rovers one was kind of a free pass because he was only in there for a short period of time, and Rovers are Rovers. And then like you go and beat Galway and you think, right, there's something building here. Then he loses at home to Waterford, one you'd absolutely expect him to win. And then he goes and he beats the league leaders away from home in the following one. It's a mad one. Now listen, look, I know some of our listeners probably won't be listening to this till tomorrow, and this will be out of date by then, but I think tonight's a huge one. So it is, because you've got the only two clubs in the division who've made managerial changes coming head to head this early in it. And look, I know Dundalk's is an interim management, but like tonight is a kind of a, if he really starts wanting to build momentum and starts showing sight that things are moving in the right direction there, like tonight's a 3-point must really. And while on paper it should look straightforward, it looked reasonably straightforward for Pats last week too. I know Pats had to travel up there, Bows are at home, that's the added advantage they have, but like to be fair to Gartz and Burnsy, they definitely made Dundalk more defensively resolute Friday night. Now as I say, Pats were poor, they didn't test them a huge amount, and Dundalk didn't show a huge amount from an attacking perspective, but I would think it's going to be more the same tonight, like particularly the positions that Carts and Burnsy played in. I would think the two of them have quite simply gone in there and said, listen lads, let's do everything we possibly can to try and get two clean sheets and see how many points that potentially gets us, and it's going to be a case of come and break us down. So I think Rennie will earn his money to get the 3 points tonight. But no, as a person, look, he's a gas man. He's sharp. He's sharp out, I'll tell you. Yeah. You wouldn't pull the wool over his eyes, that's for sure. He's been around too long, and he's that clever sort of person. Biggest thing that he has in his favour is, and this is why I'm still not 100% sure, is he a coach or is he a manager? I think there are zero question marks over him as a coach. He's an outstanding coach. Players love his sessions, and that's the way he designs training, is he gives the players what they want. He doesn't massively overburden them with tactics or tactical instruction or, you know, slow kind of coaching sessions about you're moving here and you're moving there and all that kind of stuff. It's small-sided, it's 100 miles an hour, it's lots of mini games. He does some really good finishing exercises. He's very good at taking the players at the end of a session actually for some finishing exercises, kind of as an extra, as an add-on. And because, as I say, because he's sharp and because he's, you're aware, I think at this stage, I'm just struggling to think of a better word than banter. I absolutely fucking detest the word, but I suppose it probably is adequate because it's the word that the players would use here. Like, nobody will get the better of him in terms of a sharp tongue. Like, you know, if you know the bit of prodding and the bit of crack that goes on, he will have put downs. Have put downs that will absolutely beat anything that any of the players come out with. He's very, very good on that side of it. And I think that's why he's so well liked by players. And also, don't get me wrong, that's not to say that he's just, you know, gives the players what they want. I can think of one particular incident. I won't go into the complete ins and outs of it, but I can think of one particular incident where he went head to head with a fairly big enough name within the Dundalk dressing room, and he came out on top, let's put it that way, to such an extent that, I don't know, the way he communicates, and because he's so sharp and because he's created a reputation for himself that he's not one to mess with, players who would normally maybe bite back at certain coaches or certain managers or feel that I might be able to win this one, they don't even engage in the argument with him because they kind of know there's only going to be one winner. And they kind of, I was expecting that particular interaction, I was expecting the player to bite back and, you know, come back hard at him when he kind of threw stuff at him, but he didn't. He just kind of took it, you know, which I was surprised with. But shows maybe the strength of, you know, the strength of Rennie's character and reputation will be a help in that sense.
And you would imagine so, because now I think it's well known, he could have had the job a lot sooner. I think a combination of reasons for why he didn't actually take it before, actually Declan Devine ended up getting the gig. But sometimes, even just chatting to Kenny Cunningham over the weekend for a piece I did on the site, just kind of reminiscing about Joe Kinnear and fitting in with Wimbledon and just the kind of manager he was. And he just adored working for him, just said, like, just so straight, so, like, wore his heart on his sleeve. But he just said he was the perfect manager, person and coach for that time, at the right place at the right time. And sometimes as well, personalities at a club can fit. So what you're kind of saying there, maybe it will work at that kind of the personality he is and the kind of person he is, as well as clearly those kind of characteristics that he transfers to management and coaching, could just be a perfect fit for Boss.
Oh, it could. Listen, there's every chance it could be a massive success. I would say it is. If I was betting, I would say it is likely to be a success, to be honest with you. I'll tell you another bit that I find really, really interesting is, and you might, you, I probably didn't have my eye fully on this, you might be able to tell me, was Trevor Crawley still involved as a first team coach under the previous setup?
No, I don't think, I think he came in.
I don't think he was.
Came in with Derek Pender, didn't he, as like to help, because I think he'd step back and was maybe doing stuff with the academy, because obviously he was part obviously of, he has a full time, Trevor had got a full time job in the law library, came in with with Keith Long obviously at Bowes and his number two, and I think he stepped away totally as part of when Keith Long left. I think he might have been in doing a bit with the academy. I could be wrong there, but he was on the bench last night. Oh, sorry, last night on Friday night.
He's been on the bench for pretty much all of the last few games since Rennie went in.
Excellent coach. It could be the perfect. Balance
I think this is a huge part of it. If Rennie has sat down with Trev and had a chat and said, "Listen, I'd love the two of us to work together here," you're literally talking about two of the most respected coaches in the country working side by side. So I think he's straight away, he's on a winner if he's got Trev back involved. That's an absolutely huge one for me. To be honest with you, people were asking me the other day about who did I think Dundalk might go after, and I actually said they could do worse than putting in a call to Trev, because I would love to see Trev having another a crack at management himself. Although, as you say, we all have our home situations and our work situations, and maybe his work situation precludes him from taking on a gig with of that magnitude. But certainly if Bowes can hold on to him and Rennie and Trev click in the way that Trev and Keith clicked, that could really, really take off for them.
And you know what, like, this, you're looking at it, we're talking about, hopefully people, well, fingers crossed, people will actually be listening to this podcast before the end dog match comes out, depending on what more breaking news might come up. But if you look at, like, Bowes win, because I think even though obviously there's a few teams that only play nine games, they are the only match on three. If Bowes win, they go towards. They'll be above Rovers. Now, they'll have played a game more than Rovers. And you were saying there about clean sheet, and I'll be honest, I don't see it happening, but if for some reason Bowes absolutely run riot and get one on the goal difference, they could even go joint. They could even go above Derry City at the seconds on goal difference. Now, they would have to win by 7 goals. I don't think that's going to happen. But it just shows you, it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, when you come in and you replace a manager, like, you're kind of replacing them thinking, oh, it's a survival job, or it's just stick where you are type of thing. Whereas he's coming in and he's already looking up the table. He should be.
Yeah.
And his next
two games are against the bottom two in the division. Like, they followed tonight's game up with a home to Drogheda on Friday night, which then I'm pretty sure, I'm just having a quick look here as I talk to you, then they have Dundalk again. So their next three games are Dundalk, Drogheda, Dundalk.
Rovers.
And then back to Rovers, slightly tougher one. But, well, not that the others, I think the others could definitely be banana skins, but... like, realistically, there's a genuine real opportunity to go 9 points from 9 there. And the next thing, you're sitting on 22 points after 12 games, and you would find it hard to believe that if they're sitting on 22 points that they won't definitely be, I would say that almost definitely 22 points should definitely have them top three by the end of round 12. And things could absolutely massively take off. I'm reassessing now. Initially, in my head, I was kind of going, is anything outside of European qualification, a poor season? Possibly is now at this stage, really. Although, I don't know. I'm fighting with my own mind here. How do you who doesn't, from the current top four, who do they finish ahead of? Past Rovers, Derry, Shells. If the work cut out there.
Do you know what? It's a strange one. I always feel, even at this point of the season, about things settled down, but I do kind of get a sense of how the season's going to go already a little bit. And you're kind of, if you're looking at it, like what happened last year with Bowes, got a great start, obviously with Declan Lavoyan, we kind of were top of the league for a bit, we're doing really well, and then just kind of, and then just tapered off. You would imagine with a new manager in there, and maybe the structures that's in place there, and the coach, and obviously with, say, Trevor Crawley there, Derek Pender's in there, obviously at the head of it is obviously going to be Adam Reynolds, and you kind of outlined what he can bring. Like, you imagine Bowles will strengthen as well in the summer. Obviously, Pat Fillon will be busy already. You would imagine making sure there could be reinforcements coming in. So, like, you think they have got a decent budget there. Don't think they're kind of scraping on the back of the couch, you know. But I just think that they need to be looking from the point of view of, look what's already happened at Bolton, where Pat's serious amount of changes. If Pat's maybe click a little bit more as the season goes on and they settle down, maybe they proven last year under John Daly that they're capable of going on a bit of a run. We'll come on to Rovers and the fourth section of the Shane Keegan was right part of this podcast, but other than a bizarre kind of period against Pat's the Friday before last, in the first half were completely dominant, looked so again at last Friday and are in a really good run of form. Dirty, again, if you look at it, 31-4 drawn 4, lost 2 at our second of the table. They're not, like, that's a game. I'll be honest, I was looking at it thinking, like, that's a game against Drogheda when they get ahead that they shouldn't be dropping points in. You know what I mean? And Shells, that's maybe a bit of not so much of an outlier, but you're kind of thinking, right, this is different. How are they going to deal with it then? Being top, having that really strong start and then dealing with that. Like, that's the kind of... I kind of have an idea of what to expect. Maybe I'm kind of being a bit silly. Does that make sense? I have an expectation of what's going to happen in the next.
Yeah, I think despite the topsy-turvy nature at the start of the season, I do think that current top five and bottom five, I would be amazed. You know, I think that should finish as the. I'm not saying in that order. I'm just saying that the five clubs, Shells, Derry, Rovers, Pats, Bowes, I mean, they should be the top five come the end of the season in whatever order. Sligo, Waterford, Galway, Drogheda, Dundalk, they should be the bottom five in whatever order. And therefore, any time that a top five team now is at home to a bottom five team, now I'm saying top five and bottom five, there's literally a point between Bowes and Sligo, but I still think you probably know where I'm coming from. I think any home game there for one of those top five teams has to be win if it's against a bottom five team. Has to be. Like, it's points dropped, and that's why it was points dropped for Pats the other night. I know Pats were away, but it is going to be a very, very interesting season from here on, because, as I say, literally for me, anybody from 6th to 10th could be relegated, although I do think whoever finishes 9th this year, from what I've seen in the First Division, will be heavy, heavy favourites to beat whoever wins the playoff in the First Division. So it's possibly a case of only one down this season rather than two. And then you look at the top five, and I think... I was going to say they could finish in any order. I don't believe that. I think Rovers win the league. I keep saying that. But I think the other four teams could be in any order.
So you've obviously coronated, I'm guessing that's the word, you've obviously crowned Shamrock Rovers champions of Wordle already for this season. It's a lot tighter in the Premier League. It's a lot tighter in the Premier League. Not for Paul Bearson. Just have a quick listen.
It's a good finish by Bailey, but it's got to be stopped at Sewell. So you don't get these chances. You go home tonight and you sit there and you think, that's gone.
You talk about improvement.
For me, it's gone. You know, and you've worked that hard for 32 games to go that extra yard, just 1 yard, not 20 or 30, 1 yard, stop that cross. And it's lazy. You know, it's lazy.
Well, we'll come back to the takeaways, but are you saying it's gone for Arsenal?
Yeah, 100%.
You've gone early there, Merce. You're going to take your red socks? You've got red socks on today.
They're gone. They're on the barbecue.
There's only 2 points in it.
So obviously that's poor despondent Paul Bearson after Arsenal were beaten by Aston Villa at the weekend.
God love him.
Well, sports got hockeyed as well, you know.
Not exactly a time for me to get chirpy, is it?
True. At least United are finding consistency with another draw away to Bournemouth. But I don't know, like, obviously Liverpool losing to Palace, Arsenal losing to Villa, Man City absolutely battering Luton. Like, everyone now said, oh, that's it, title's gone. But, like, they're only 2 points clear, Man City. And they still have a couple of three games. They've Brighton away. They've Spurs away as well, don't they? They've Fulham away. Don't get me wrong, they'll probably win all these games 4-0. But, like, if they are fixtures you would look at thinking, oh, something might happen there. But in the next edition of Shane Keegan is Right, are you as despondent for Arsenal's hopes as Paul Bearson?
Yeah, Yeah, I am. It was the Sunday I always thought would come eventually. Probably wouldn't have picked this round for it to happen, but I always suspected there'd be a weekend where City would win and the other two would drop points and that City would probably look at kicking on from there. Now, would I have predicted those two defeats? Absolutely not, don't get me wrong. But I have been fairly consistent in saying that I just like Liverpool, and I keep saying this as a compliment, Liverpool are punching above their weight this season. Without a doubt, they are punching above their weight. They don't have the quality to have taken it as far as they've even taken it, to be honest. And I could look like a fool here. I could still go and win the thing. It's you know, but it's far from, technically, it's still far from over. But I don't know, the amount of experience they have in wrapping up titles, the amount of experience within the team, within the manager, I just couldn't see where this City question, like City's only question mark ever is, you know, if they draw a game and maybe draw two out of three games or something, you say, oh, they're not the all dominant team that they were. Like, it tends to be a really small blip in form. Like, two draws in three games is an absolutely monumental blip when it comes to Man City. Like, that's as blippy as the blip gets. Do you know what I mean? Whereas with the rest, there's the potential for it to be a lot worse. And look, both clubs, Liverpool and Arsenal, I'm trying not to sound like I'm grinning like a Cheshire cat here when it comes to Arsenal, but I probably am. Both clubs are could potentially be having the week from hell here. Like, there's a hell of a chance.
But that's it, isn't it? Because City have Madrid on Wednesday, and obviously that's 3-3, and Arsenal and Bayern as well. That's a 2-2, isn't it? That 2-2? Yeah, 2-2.
Now, the only thing I'll say there is, like, Pep will have been absolutely delighted with the Premier League results, obviously, goes without saying. But I do think he'll be shouting for both teams to try and get through in Europe. Now, obviously, it's going to take a massive, massive, massive performance from Liverpool. They probably look like they are gone. But I'll tell you what, if I'm Pep, I'm cheering on Arsenal against Bayern Munich. Like, there was a recent bit of data analysis done that I found extremely interesting around the amount of points that Arsenal, I have it somewhere, I'm glancing at my phone here as I'm talking to you, the amount of points that Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool have picked up in a Premier League game where they had 4+ days to prepare, as opposed to the amount of points each team has picked up when they had 3 or less days to prepare. And there's a colossal difference, so there is. So I think if those two teams were to go out of Europe and now only have the Premier League, all of a sudden I'd be a little bit less comprehensive about City marching to the title, because there's no doubt the numbers show it makes an impact.
Just looking there, City don't actually play in the Premier League now for another 10 days because obviously they have FA Cup this weekend, so they're playing next week. But Arsenal do have two games. The Arsenal play twice in the league before City play again in the league. So they have Wolves, and this goes back into what you're saying there about the point to prepare. So they have Wolves away on the 20th of April. Then they have Chelsea at home on the 23rd of April. So, like, I think Liverpool have a couple of games in that period as well. So, like, sometimes that can be something that can swing it a little bit. You know what I mean? But as you say, like, City, it's just almost, isn't it? It's like that relentless machine. They grind you down eventually. Like, the day, some of how you kind of would assess a title challenge and how things materialise, they've kind of changed the expectations on it, really, now, haven't they? You would actually genuinely be shocked now if City drop points between now and the end of the season. So it's,
you would, and they're also, unsurprisingly, they're also the ones, I've actually found that graphic here on my phone, they're actually the ones who least waver in terms of how that 3-day or 4-day or more or less affects them. City's win percentage with 3 or 4 days prep is 72%. It actually only jumps to 74% when they have 5 or more, whereas Arsenal's jumps from 60% to 70% when they have 5 or more, and Liverpool's jumps from 67% to 83% when they have 5 or more. Right. So I do think this can yet have a bearing in it. And as I say, you know, I'd certainly be cheering on the other two sides midweek this week if I was Pep.
Well, you've given a very kind of structured finish to the podcast there with those stats, Shane. Probably a very ill-fitting way to end the podcast, considering how it's gone with the breaking news. I was half expecting the Irish manager to actually be confirmed in that time, just to add to a bit of the chaos. This is when we could have done with Gav being on, just to kind of bring a sense of calm to all and perspective, you know.
Which will we have first? A new CEO or a new manager?
Well, this is actually one. This is something now that I'm going to have to try and look into. Well, does this actually affect now what's going to happen unless the decision's already been made? Like the FA have been saying that an appointment will be confirmed this week. John O'Shea is actually doing media tomorrow in the Aviva Stadium, but it's on behalf of UEFA for the Europa League. That's tomorrow, so you would think something might become a bit clearer then. But yeah, you wonder now, will this be an excuse to maybe push things out a little bit? It's actually just a bit of a mess, you know. It really is. And like even just excuse me, while we're just before we do go, like I saw obviously Gavin was not able to join us for the pod today, but he just put out a message there on social media as well where it's true. It's just like there's now an interim CEO, an interim marketing and communications director, and an interim senior men's manager. And then I saw someone reply, what was it? It's fairly funny, it was Voisable is the name of the account replied, saying the Football Association of Interims. So what a that would be. So enjoy the rest of your day, Shane. Spot and then God knows what will happen next in the FA land by the time you speak. So take care.
Cheers, David.